Long Shots Golf Betting Podcast here on the VSiN Podcast Network. Matt Brown, Kelly Bidlin, Wes Reynolds coming to you for the BMW. We are down to the final 50 golfers. Next week, we get down to the final 30. We started with 70 last week as the playoffs got going. And when it was all said and done, Justin Rose, the old man out there on tour, getting it done in a playoff against JJ Spahn. Pour one out for Tommy Fleetwood. Pour one out for Wes in a futures ticket. That being said, and this is not trash talking Wes or anybody out there that bet on Tommy Fleetwood or whatever, but you know what you're getting yourself into. So I don't feel sorry for any of you people out there. He's a loser. Kelly, he is a loser. He's the best loser in the world. He's the best loser in the world. There's no doubt about it. Like, the guy is the best loser in the world.
Very high quality loser. Very high.
He is the best loser in the world, but he's a loser. He goes out there and blows it on Sunday and allows two guys to pass him up, get into a playoff, and get it done. That being said, Wes, I think if Ted Scott had been on the bag for Scotty probably wins the tournament. Like, there were a couple of odd decisions Scotty made that probably Ted talks him out of, and a couple of putts that he missed that Ted probably reads a little bit differently, and Scotty ends up probably winning the whole thing. But Ted had to take care of a family matter, not there for his bag on Sunday. The chaplain took over like he did, a year ago or whatever. And Scotty ends up, one shot out when it's all said and done. But Wes, roller coaster of emotions, I'm sure for you. I assume, given the fact that you were on Fleetwood, you were able to get down some hedge money.
Yeah. On JJ Spahn at first, and then Justin Rose because he didn't want to stop making birdies. But I really thought this was the first time where it's like, I really believe he's finally gonna do it. Scotty's not chasing him. He's off a bogey, out of striking distance. Fleetwood arrives on the 16th tee with a 2-shot lead. And then he pars the easiest hole on the course, the par 5, and makes bogey on 17. So you look at the numbers, it's like, okay, number one in driving accuracy, number two in greens and regulation, I think number two in strokes gained putting, and finds a way not to win. That's now 161 starts without a win, 6 runners up, 6 third places, 29 top fives, 42 top tens, 8 wins worldwide, none on American soil, and on we go again with Tommy Fleetwood. It did seem more like that it was going to be his day once Scotty wasn't really right on his ass. Then it was like, okay, now this is finally the time. And then he found a way not to even make the playoff and finishes T3. So we move on to Baltimore.
Yes, we move on. I had nobody sniffing, so I didn't have any of that. I did feel guilty. I felt bad. But, you know, money is money and bets are bets. We are given the no price here in Vegas. I took the no on Fleetwood to start on Sunday. Got that home, so was able to gave that out on the show on Sunday morning if you're watching on VSiN. But yeah, it just is one of those things where until I see it with my own eyes. And like, here's the other problem, Kelly, with all of this. And we joked about this with Cam Young, but this is really the case with Fleetwood. It's like, his price is so depleted, it's so depressed every time because he is so incredibly consistent and so good. Like, I mean, you can keep betting him outright if you want to, and like, just so that you can say that, hey, I was on him when he finally won a tournament. But like, you're stuck now at this point. Like, you can't make your money back on Tommy Fleetwood. His odds are too short because he continues to finish inside the top 10 in every one of these tournaments. He just can't win. Yeah. He never gets cut. Like, he's so incredibly consistent. And so, again, by all means, if y'all want to keep betting him, bet him. But like, you're just betting him just so that you can be the person that like does the Twitter, like, you know, pat on the back that I was on him when he finally won, because you're not winning any money off of him. Like, you're stuck for life for Tommy Fleetwood.
Yeah, it's tough, I think, and you know, it's probably fun if you're an odds maker setting those odds every week. I like, cause you know, you can't put him too far. You can't put him too far back because of where he finishes consistently, yeah. Like you're talking about. But you know, he's going to be dialed in right at those, you know, 20-1 marks right around there, and it, you know, or a little bit longer at full field events. But yeah, no, I hear you. I'm glad to hear you made some money, man. I feel like all I heard was horror stories from this tournament. This is a tournament that I didn't have that much exposure on. I went in heavy on Scotty Live a couple times on Saturday, and then, oof, wow, that didn't work out. Thought I was feeling good about that as well. And then, yeah, Tip of the cap to Chris Felica, who that was maybe the worst ticket I saw all week, was the he had J.J. Spahn in winner without market that included Scheffler and Fleetwood.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah, that's the worst one I saw all week.
I mean,
that makes me feel less bad.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you this. I had Fleetwood pulled it out, I would have been stuck huge in this tournament because I had nobody even sniffing anything, and then I went in pretty heavy on the no price on him. And there, I'll admit, at that back nine, I had just assumed that this was going to be a bloodbath for me. Like, I was like, oh shit, he's going to actually do this. Like he's going to get it done.
Tournament. I mean, awesome tournament. Oh, right? I mean, like Fleetwood,
fantastic.
Fleetwood there the whole time. Scheffler makes his big push. You think he's going to go steal it? J.J. Spahn just kind of lingering the whole time, able to get there, and then Justin Rose just a flurry of birdies down the stretch. One of the better golf tournaments of the year, just from a golf perspective.
Oh, absolutely, from a fan perspective, and you know, credit where credit's due. Right on the broadcast. We talk a lot of times, and they still don't do this part of it or whatever, about like, we feel they should emphasize the money aspect a lot more. You know, guy makes a putt, and instead of just saying like, oh, that moved it from T13 to T8, it'd be like, oh, that was a $170,000 putt that he just made. Like, I think that would, you know, whatever. But they did have that bubble board up there like all day on Sunday, which actually made for like the tournament within the tournament, right? Which actually was pretty cool. So instead of where we see so often, they cut to a guy and he's 9 strokes off the lead. You know he's about to make the putt. Like, you know he's about to, like, do something crazy. Because, like,
here's Johnny Vegas from 48 feet.
Yeah, it's like, if you're 9 strokes off the lead on a Sunday and they cut to you, you just made something, you know, or whatever. But at least they were cutting to this, and you didn't know what was going to happen because it was just affecting what was going on with the bubble and stuff. And so it actually made for an even more compelling broadcast, in my opinion, because when they were doing those cutaways, it wasn't just an automatic make. It wasn't just like, oh, you knew this guy was about to hole out or you knew whatever. It was just them showing it because it actually meant something, even though they weren't really sniffing the top of the leaderboard. So I, like you said, Kelly, for me, maybe the best viewing tournament of the year for me. Like, I thought it was the storylines, the drama, like I said, the tournament within the tournament that was going on and all of that. Like, I loved it. Wes, I'm sure you loved it less than we did because of the outcome, but just, you know, if you were able to separate yourself from it, what did you think of the overall tournament?
No, it was a hell of a playoff. Mm-hmm. I was just pretty disillusioned with how it turned out, but it was good golf and good battle with Rose and Spahn, and Rose ends up winning on the third playoff hole. But yeah, they were showing the top 50. So, you know, the guys that were really on the bubble, by the way, the guys that moved into the 50 this week, Kurt Kitayama, Bud Cauley, Ricky Fowler, Johnny Vegas, and JT Poston, which means 5 guys had to move out. That was Aldrich Potgieter, Jordan Spieth, Jake Knapp, Wyndham Clark, Minwoo Lee moved out of the top 50. So they'll be doing that again this week, I think, to see who's going to make the top 30. Probably a little less movement in terms of the numbers here, just with less players. But yeah, they got to show that, I think, to see who's going to make that, because those do matter, even though I think the broadcast could do a better job to say, okay, this gets them into the signature events, or being in the top 30 gets them into all the major championships next year, you know? And I think 3 of the 4 have that provision where if you reach a tour championship, you get into the major. It's like, that's important. Like, that's a big deal for a guy like a Bud Cauley, let's say, for instance, this week, who's now number 46. Gets in that top 30, man. He's going to Augusta. And he's getting in the PGA, and he's getting in the Open Championship. Like that's kind of a big deal for some of these guys, because it's not a certainty, like with the top guys, where it's like, well, they're in the majors for like the next 5 to 10 years. Mm. But with some of these guys, it really does matter.
I thought the graphic was cool that they were using, Matt. I guess I'm not going to get as excited as you, because I feel like they usually do this during the playoffs, but it all just feels, as I'm doing right now, as I'm showing a standings page that has a big-ass FedEx sponsorship on it. Mm. It just feels like, you know, I mean, you have a sponsor to deliver on, right? You've built this up all season long. I mean, how sick of it are you, like, in May when you're like, they go to cut away to the FedEx Cup standings, and you're like, I don't care. I don't care about this for 2 months.
Oh, they start this in February.
Right, yes.
Like you're at the American Express, and it's like, that's going to change the FedEx Cup standings. It's like, you've got guys that probably haven't even made their debut on tour yet.
Yeah.
That are for sure going to be there.
Yeah, you're right, Wes. Like, I would rather them build up the fact, like, that, to me, they didn't build it up enough of the top 50 and what that means for, like you're talking about, Wes, going forward next year. How much money is on the line in prize pools in signature events next year? That's what you're putting yourself in play for. It just always feels so like FedEx Cup focused this year, the playoffs, man, catch the fever. It's like, no, man.
There must be some directive from above for them to like not bring up the monetary aspect of all of this, because at this point it almost,
it's just
like,
so
they're
weird.
Like they're going out of their way to like not talk about it. You know, like it's like, it is the craziest thing that they like did. It just does not get mentioned in the broadcast at all. Right. I mean, like when the guy wins, they don't even say he won $3.6 million. Like, they don't even say that. Mm-hmm. Like they don't even that's not even brought up when the guy wins. They're just like, oh, he's the champion. Like, no, the son of a bitch won $4 million. You should be talking about that, you know? But, like, it's not that. So there has to be some sort of directive from up above, which is a bad directive, by the way. People like hearing about this type of stuff. It's sexy. It's whatever. Like, all of this is, like, the yes, we get it. They're awesome golfers, and we love their ability to go out and do what they do. It's also really cool if you were to say, oh, and by the way, he's getting a fat check for $3.6 million. Or the guy that made that putt that moved in fifth place, that made it to where he's getting $890,000 instead of $650,000 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that is compelling to an audience as well. I don't know why they focus so hard on everything else but the money.
It might be trying to be like the anti-Liv here too, because a lot of that is about money. And then it's not only the individual, but then they have, here's the flapjacks versus the stingers or whatever the hell it is. And I'm being G-rated on what would want to say on some of those team names, but that's what they do, because then they have to have a playoff for that. And it's all, you know, that's all about money. Like, nobody's going to remember 5 years from now, okay, the stingers beat the, you know, the whatever in Chicago for whatever the team money was, but that's a selling point for them.
Man, there are some names as I'm just scrolling through the FedEx Cup standings right now. I don't know that I remember Brian Harman having all that great of a year, or where the hell is Sungjae Im at? Yeah, Sungjae Im is 25th. I feel like Sungjae Im's had like the worst season.
There were some of these guys like Tom Hoagie. I was like, how? How did he make it? Ricky made it because Ricky had a decent amount of sponsor exemptions. That's been a point of contention and got into fields. But you're like, some of these guys that won events, it's like, well, Aldrich Potgieter was a runner up and also won an event. He misses by two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of these guys that are PGA Tour winners not going forward. But yeah, I was surprised to see some of the names on this list. You were mentioning, Jason Day. Has he been in contention in that many events? But here they are, the top 50, actually top 49 this week. By the way, Sepp Straka, who's number 5 in the points, did withdraw on Monday. He will be at East Lake for the Tour Championship. Probably won't drop that far, missing this event. But we're going to have 49 in Baltimore this week.
Yeah, and Kelly, if you're watching guys on the YouTube channel, Kelly's showing you kind of the bubble right now, and the one thing that does come into play is just this is multiplied so heavily that, you know, there are almost everybody is in play, because if you were to win this thing, it's 2,000 points to the winner or whatever. So it's like, you know, you rocket up the board. So I think they did that to make it to where nobody's just playing it dead. Like you're in no matter what. Like you can make it to the top 30. So in theory, while there will be a lot of look at this kind of bubble that's going on here and whatnot, like, I mean, the dead ass last could still make the top 30 because of the way that the multiplier works.
Yep. Sorry, I got obsessed with Sungjae Im stuff. 25 events, 8 missed cuts for him this year.
Be consistent, man. That's how you do it, even if you're not winning. And by the way, for that Tour Championship next week, everybody starts at even par. No starting strokes, as we've mentioned last week on the pod here. And the winner of the FedEx Cup is going to be the lowest scoring player after the four rounds.
Before we transition into BMW, because
Kelly, just real quick, though, if you want to scroll down a couple more names just for people to see who is currently out, they might not realize, Xander Schauffele, Jason Day, you know, like these dudes are out currently.
Yeah.
Now,
so that's
a high finish gets them in for sure, but like, you know, that's just something to bring up.
So this is where I kind of wanted to bring this of there are still those markets to win the FedEx Cup that are out there, right? I think these were more valuable in years past where you were trying to catch someone, right, that was going to make a charge in the playoffs, and then you'd get a boost with the starting strokes and the Tour Championship. Wes, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, and Matt, you kind of just led me into a couple golfers. Like, I think the only way that you'd be looking to bet into that market is if I think there's someone on the outside that top 30 that I really like this week, then you're maybe sprinkling along with betting this week. But I don't know what your guys' thoughts are, but I don't really see much value into betting into that market right now.
It's a lot different without the starting strokes, I think this time around, and really not a lot of people. I don't know a lot of books that have made this available to win the FedEx Cup, because it's kind of like you're going to win the cup if you win the Tour Championship. Which
I'm shocked how many there are actually. I saw them up at MGM, Caesars. A lot of the big books have them up. Yeah.
Okay.
I was kind of surprised to see how many they did. How many had them up?
Yeah, because I'm trying to look through them as we speak. But this was all based on years ago when the aforementioned Justin Rose. Remember he won that FedEx Cup in like $10 million, and it's like, why the hell is he getting a trophy? Because it's all about Tiger when he won the actual tournament, but Tiger didn't win the FedEx Cup. So then they wanted to make their cup matter. So that's why they did the starting strokes. And it's always tricky because you want to reward a great season, you know, where it shouldn't just be all or nothing. But it looks like that's what it's pretty much going to be next week.
If you look here, the difference in, you know, I mean, in these points or whatever. So I'm looking as to how they're going to be awarded this week. So 10th place will still get 300 points in this thing. So Kelly, if you kind of go back to the bubble, I mean, those are all separated. I mean, like you can see it. I mean, it's 30 points between Glover and Stevens, Pender. So like, I mean, even down with Xander at 43rd, if he got 10th and got to 1,399 points, he would probably, depending on how things shake, I mean, he's going to be really close. Like he'd be really close to getting in, because it's 1207 is sitting at 31st. So again, kind of like a top 10 finish for some of these dudes on the bubble is at least going to make it interesting. I'll put it that way. It'll make it interesting.
I mean, I do have and I think you do as well, Matt. I do have a 22-1 on Xander to win the thing. So that'd be cool if he did it, but I'm not going to be adding. I'm not going to be adding to it. And I think it's the same number right now. I saw DraftKings 22-1.
I made the super long bets on Schauffele and Hovland, one of which is currently out, and one of which can play his way out this week. So great. Yeah, I'm feeling super.
I went Schauffele and Finau. So you're okay. Yeah, those are my two guys.
By the way, just to interject here, I did find something. This is from, I don't want to butcher his name, Paul Hodowanek, who is a writer for staff writer for PGAtour.com. He does have on the X the minimum finishes that players outside the top 30 need this week in Baltimore to get to East Lake next week. So going all the way to the bottom, JT Poston at number 50 would need a solo 11th to make next week. So it goes through all the numbers. I think you guys mentioned Xander needs solo 21st out of 49 this week to go ahead and make East Lake. So yeah, that was something I just happened to search this and found this on Twitter. So thank you to Paul at PGAtour.com for pointing these scenarios out.
Yeah. And the other thing, and just since we said it, we like to talk about the monetary deal, DFL next week in Atlanta is still $550,000. So ass last is still $550,000. So you get to play next week. You play like absolute ass and you still cash a check for $500,000. So yeah, it's a good thing to make it into the top 30 for sure.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, I know. Could you imagine like going out there and just shooting like 80 four times and then just cashing your $500,000 check?
I'd be the worst, man. It'd be like Survivor.
You just go shoot four rounds of 80 and then you just go to the Waffle House and like get, you know, with your big check.
It's like being a starting park in NASCAR.
it's like it's Survivor when you have that crap first week and you're like, well, I guess I'm going for the booby prize. No, yeah, you go shoot an 80 in round one and you're like, well, Whatever, pack it in. I might have a couple beers before next round.
Yeah, beers are still on you because you're cashing for $500,000 no matter what. Like, you're just like, beers are still on me. It doesn't matter. I'm dead last. I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. Beers are still on me. It's going to be great. Looking at these odds this week, as you would imagine, everybody knows. Yes, Scotty Scheffler is your favorite. Again, like we said, he was one stroke off this past week. Ho-hum T3 for Scotty Scheffler, and did so on Sunday without his caddy. So he's what's that?
We'll have to do it again without his caddy.
Yeah, he is under 3-1, sitting kind of, I think the biggest number you can find out there is at 365. You can find it 2.5-1. But about 220, 230, 225, something like that is typically where you're looking at him right now. Big jump down to Rory, who's the only other single digit here in this one, sitting about at that 8-1 if you're looking for the best number out there in the market. And then a big, big jump to Xander or Tommy, depending on which book that you're at. Ludwig, also Justin Thomas, Patrick Cantlay are in the 20s as well. And then you get into the 30s with J.J. Spahn and Cam Young and Matt McNeely, Russell Henley and stuff like that. Guys, I mean, like, look, let's just go ahead and start with Scotty because, like, there's no point in us talking about our models or anything. Yeah, he's going to be number one. It doesn't matter, like, what's going on. So let's call it an average price of 225 out there, depending on which book that you're looking at with Scotty. I have a tough time in a 50-person field, and I'm not saying any of these dudes are dead. They're all awesome, awesome golfers, but, I mean, are we worried about Ryan Fox or Thomas Dietrich or Tom Hoagie or Brian Campbell or, you know, any of these guys? Like, I'm not. So it's kind of like Scotty in a field of 30, you know, something like that.
I'd like to give these guys credit, but the problem is that, I mean, maybe let's let Wes dive into the course preview, but it's like the course sets. This is a Scotty course. Like, it sets up well for his game.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I look at that price and, like I said last week, I thought about doing just the fire one bullet and walk away. I'd have been heartbroken too with Scotty, the way that he finished on Sunday. But man, it's very tough. It seems like we're just basically trying to make cases for everybody else and go to Scotty. But Wes, let's get to that course preview here as we head to Caves Valley. We have seen this a few years ago. That being said, major overhaul here. So I did not care too much about the last time they were here. After reading all of the changes that have been made, I don't think the course really plays close to what we saw last time, but what say you?
Yeah, one more thing on Scotty, by the way, it is Mike Cromie on the bag this week, who is Chris Kirk's regular caddy. By the way, Chris Kirk finished number 51, if you wondered why he was being shown so much in Memphis on Sunday. Number 51, so one spot out of making it to this week's event, which is in Caves Valley Golf Club, Owens Mills, Maryland, which is the site of where the Baltimore Ravens have training camp. That's why you've seen a lot of players over there watching the Ravens this week. Tom Fazio Design, 1991. They did have this, as you mentioned, Matt, 2021, and it was thought to be too easy, and it proved to be so because it got a lot of rain. So it was like, you know, clean in place lies. And I think this was one I actually hit when Patrick Cantlay, it was a long playoff against Bryson DeChambeau, and Cantlay won this at 27 under par. Seven players, by the way, shot 20 under or better. I think the conditions are going to be firmer and faster. So just even though there's a little bit of rain during the middle of the week, shouldn't be like it was because they've changed this to a par 72 to a par 70. So they want to emphasize a lot of those mid to long irons. The course is 7601, just over 7,600 yards to be exact. They've moved kind of the bunkers a little bit more up in the fairways to narrow the basically the landing areas essentially off the tee. Bent greens, 5,200 square feet. So on the smaller side, 12.5 on the stimp. They want more uniformity in terms of green speed. That's what a lot of players complained about last night. Some of the greens were super fast, and some of them were super slow. So they want more uniformity, and then move it a little bit closer to some of the hazard areas. Rough, about 3 inches. Rye, bluegrass, fescue combined. They've narrowed the fairways a little bit. So to get to the par 70, there were two holes, the second and the 12th. that are usually par fives are going to play at par fours this week. And then they lengthen the first hole, I believe, to 481 yards by 100 yards. So 37-60 on the front, 38-41 on the back. So just the two par fives now at number four and also at number 16. If you're looking at, I guess, some courses that kind of correlate here, because it's big off the tee, Valhalla, TPC Craig Ranch, Memorial Park, Liberty National, Detroit, where you can, you know, bomb it a little bit. And I, there was a drone flyover that PGA Tour provided that I put in the column this year that shows the changes. That so this is not an old video from 2021. So shows the changes. Weather this week, humid. Where it is everywhere in the summer, high 80s, low 90s. Probably going to get a little bit of rain on Wednesday and Thursday. And then weekend at least looks relatively dry. So I think the heat, you know, will make it firmer and faster. So it won't be as soft as it was in 2021 when Cantlay beat DeChambeau in the playoff.
Kelly, as you looked into the course, did you come away with the same thing I did, which is you're not really looking, don't really care at all what happened last time they were here? I mean... It was not only were the conditions ridiculous, but the course was completely different. I mean, it played as a 72 as opposed to a par 70. The, you know, it was like ridiculous, like so much shorter. I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing out everything that I saw.
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah. I mean, I did check and see with some of the guys that I bet on kind of what they did if they were here, you know, for a little confirmation, I guess. I was more interested, and Wes just broke it down pretty well, more interested in what the renovations were and what it, I mean, it's basically a new course. You go from a 72 to a 70 and lengthen all these. You're narrowing fairways. It sounds like the rough's going to be purposely grown out even longer. It's listed 3 to 4 inches. I've read a couple things that it is a solid 4 inches and expect it to be a bit, it could get a bit longer than that. I was definitely more intrigued by reading what it's looking like now than it did in 2021.
Yeah, it's you know, this is one of those deals where we talked about, this happens a few times throughout the course of the season, right, where we're not incredibly familiar with the course. We have to kind of take people's word for it and the things that we see and all of that and try to handicap it from there. And so, you know, that's one of the challenges that does come along here with this tournament as well. Wes, you know, obviously we start the model, you know, pretty much every week with approach. And I know that that's going to be an emphasis here this week as well. Did you look at any certain type of approach numbers, and what else did you round out the model with this week?
175 to 200, 200 plus. You're not going to get a lot of wedges in here. You're going to get a lot of like long to medium length irons in here, because this is a big time course. This is one of the bigger courses. I think this is the third longest they played this year. It's also very driver heavy. So I didn't look too much at the 2021, but I did notice that there were a few bombers on the first page of that leaderboard. So I think you wanted to look at strokes gained off the tee. And in terms of longer hitters, like in 2021, Bryson, Rory, DJ, Sam Burns, John Rahm, and then also the really good accurate drivers that are not as long. So, like, I think Sergio was up there on the first page of the leaderboard. Patrick Cantlay, of course, won the thing. So, strokes gained off the tee, and then I did a little extra for driving distance. I just think you can hit it a long way here. Even though the fairways are narrower, you're going to be taking driver mostly off the tee. Remember we talked about the Wyndham a couple weeks ago, you don't really take driver. You're going to take driver on about every kind of longish hole on this one. And I think it is going to play more difficult, but you're probably looking at close to 20 under par winning this thing. It might not be ridiculously easy like the 27 under that was won here 4 years ago. So plenty of birdie opportunities. So birdie or better percentage. Strokes gain, easy scoring conditions, just because this is going to be a scoreable layout, I think. And then I did a little strokes gain putting bent grass greens. These are pure bent grass, and they'll run around 12.5 on the stimp. So about average or slightly above average, not super fast, but not super slow. And then I did strokes gained long courses, you know, which in a lot of the databases that we've talked about frequently on the show is usually 7,400 or 7,500 or more. So looked at that as a little bit of a tiebreaker and a little bit of context, but pretty straightforward basically this week with the course being so different. So you can't use a lot of that data. You can look at some of the names and see what kind of player profiles in terms of who should be successful here. But in terms of the data, no good from 4 years ago.
Yeah, I think that just worth pausing on something Wes said real quick, because we talk about a lot of these guys, and we talk a lot about these stats throughout the season. But I do think it is, look, I focused heavy on some distance guys this week, but there are ways to make up that distance, right? And Wes kind of brought it up. There are golfers that we talk about often, whether it's a Tommy Fleetwood or an Aaron Rye or a Colin Morikawa, these guys that are extremely accurate off the tee and very, very good with their long iron play, keeps them in contention with these big-time tournaments, even if they are played on longer courses. So there are ways to make up that distance off the tee, but those are the type of guys you want to be looking at.
Yeah, and again, I'm just speculating. I'm looking at this differently. And Kelly, I'm curious as to how you do. I actually don't think this is going to play easy. 7,600 plus yards at a par 70 is a friggin' beast of a course. I mean, we're talking like 100 yards less than Torrey, and Torrey plays at 72, you know, at a par 72. Like, I don't think this is going to be super scoreable. I could be wrong, but they put in the aeration systems under the greens. Like, these things are going to be hard. They're going to be fast. They're supposed to run at a 12.5, like all this stuff. Like, I'm thinking more in like the 14-15 range as opposed to the 20 range. So I am a little bit different in my school of thought here.
Could be more Castle Pines like last year, which was 12 under, but yeah. We've seen, like, maybe it's going to be somewhere in the middle, because we've seen the ridiculous Caves Valley 27 under, JT at Medina 25 under, DJ at Crooked Stick 23 under. So I do think that they want this to play more difficult, which is why they changed this thing. So maybe mid-teens. I was thinking right at 20, but we'll see. I'm horrible at predicting, like, winning scores in tournaments.
I mean, I think it's so tough with this course and everything that they change. I mean, like, besides what you change, just, I mean, going from a 72 to a 70 is a massive, I mean, that's massive, right, for what we're going to see scores at. I actually think that I think that's going to affect things more with the final score than anything they did with the course. This is where, look, I'm really interested to see how this plays. I still don't think they're going to struggle too much with any type of hazards really at all for them. There's not a ton of water that comes into play. I know they tried to bring that more into play with some of the renovations, but I still don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. So if all you did was kind of lengthen some things, you know, and turn some par fives into some par fours, the way these guys play these days, I don't know that it's going to matter all that much from that perspective. But I don't know, man. I'm interested. I'm actually kind of fascinated. You guys both had kind of takes on that, because I really don't know what to expect. I don't think we're seeing 27 under. I think probably somewhere in that mix of 13 to 20 is where I expect it to land.
That's a pretty big range, Kelly. That's 13 to 20 is a pretty big range. Like, you really went out on a limb.
I also think, though, I don't think you were very Oppo West to go five strokes shorter than that. Like, I don't think that's wildly different either.
Because, like, I don't know. I think it's going to be somewhere between, like, 8 under and 22 under. I that's where I think that this thing is going to land, like, somewhere
the winner's going to be under par. That's what I predict.
Yeah, I will say this, if you read some of the stuff from the people out there, I think this was in Ron's preview, where it's at least rumored that they're going to grow the rough up to 4 inches as opposed to 3 inches like it was the last time we saw this course. And then the head groundskeeper out there was saying that it did bring water into play on a lot more. I think it was five holes on the front and three on the back that now have hazards that didn't have them before or something. So I do think that they put in more hazards on this one as well. But again, we're speculating. We hadn't seen this course in play, so we're all just kind of going about this our own way here. So Wes Reynolds, we have thrown stuff into the little magic wand here that we call these models. And again, if you are just joining us, if you just found us for the playoffs, appreciate it. You can also go ahead, you can subscribe, you can rate, you can review, you can help us out here. That's all great. If you found us over on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Do appreciate that as well. Let us know in the comment section how you are going to be playing this tournament. But we do not model these. Do these models on our own. These, like, we're not coders or anything. These are models that are available to us through people that are much smarter than us, and they give us the skeleton. We're able to go in, put in the stats that we think that matter, and then weight them how heavily that we think that they matter as well. And then that is how we end up with differing opinions on all of this stuff and whatnot. So Wes, as your stuff spit everything out and you did some research, what ended up on your card?
Yeah, I mean, I may end up doing kind of the same thing where I go half on just standard outrights with the entire field. And then this week you get a Scotty and Rory market. Scotty and Rory. So but both. And obviously a big course like this, Rory McIlroy, number one in distance on the PGA Tour. So, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at necessarily, having him in that market as well, even though he comes off a week off, because this is a course where we know he can just bomb it all over the place. And, you know, it probably is more favorable to him maybe than Scotty, even though I certainly wouldn't rank him and model him ahead of Scotty by any stretch of the imagination right now. But it's a more of a Rory than a Scotty course, but it doesn't mean it's not a Scotty course, because everywhere is. But so I started not with those two guys. I started with Ludvig Aubert at 22-1 after he completed that late run at the Masters, and then he fell apart the last two holes when it looked like, okay, he's going to get in this thing. And then he went all or nothing and ended up with nothing, and I think ended up T7. He hit a lull in the late spring and in the early summer. He missed the cut at the PGA, missed the cut at the U.S. Open, didn't have a top 10 anywhere for basically 3 months in the summer until the last two of the last three starts were at the Scottish and also in Memphis last week. And he's gained with the ball striking in each of his last seven starts. And that dates back actually to when he wasn't playing any very well, June at the Memorial. So that tells you his around the green, I think, has been kind of the real weak spot for this guy. But this is a course where he's going to attack with the driver. He's going to attack with the long irons. Like, if you look 200 plus, I think the last 50 rounds, I had him seventh in this field. And then also for driving distance, I had him, I believe, fourth behind McIlroy, Kitayama, and Goddard for the entire season. So I think this is the type of course where he can play very well. We saw him do it at Castle Pines. Now, keep in mind, that was at altitude, so it's not a really similar course, but it was still big and long. So Ludvig Aubert at 22-1. And then a guy that doesn't really stat profile well, and I'm not just taking him here because I had him last time, but Patrick Cantlay at 25-1. The last victory he had, by the way, anywhere in the world, was the following BMW Championship when he won back-to-back years at Wilmington. So he has not won in close to 3 years out here. Third in the field for approach en route to a top 10 last week. And one of the things I was, you know, you search some of the reporters and some of the guys on the grounds at the courses, and I've noticed over the last few weeks, he's been playing frequently with Keegan Bradley in some tournament practice rounds, which is a sign that he more than likely is on the team. And I've defended him being on the team. I think Patrick Cantlay, the body of work and the experience, especially the camaraderie and the partnership with Xander Schauffele, he should be on the team. Now, on Sunday, because I lost the top 20 on it, I got a little bit mad at Colin Morikawa. I'm like, why the hell is he a lock to make this team? And everybody's going after Patrick Cantlay. But I think that pressure, you know, that allows him to concentrate on just winning somewhere. So Patrick Cantlay, 25-1, not the best number, but felt like I had to include. And another guy I had to include was Cameron Young at 30-1, who I thought played pretty darn well in Memphis last week, considering that first victory, sometimes that's a fade spot. Yeah. And it didn't end up being, because he ended up being top five, had a 64 on Sunday. That was the lowest round of the Sunday final round, led the field for strokes gained off the tee. And now he goes to a big old Northeast course, and he is originally from the Northeast. And he's a guy, Cameron Young, he tends to ride waves. Like, when he has hot form, it usually goes for a few weeks. And with the Ryder Cup selection looming, driver heavy course, I think he contends here. So Cameron Young 30-1. And speaking of a guy that I think still needs to make a big impression if he's going to make this Ryder Cup team, but on a course where I think he should play very well and has done so before, Sam Burns at 45-1, who shared the first round lead here 4 years ago before he finished eighth. He was number one in the field at TPC Southwind last week for putting. And I just think this is a good course for him. He attacks with the driver, you know, tries to get back in the winner's circle. He's seeing his best friend Scotty Scheffler own the world right now, and he wants to be on that Ryder Cup team to perhaps partner with him again. Didn't go so well that first time in Rome, but maybe to get another chance. And then I'm going back to somebody that was good to me 3 weeks ago, and I'm going back to Kurt Kitayama at 50-1. Remember, he cast the 40-1 at the 3M Open in Minneapolis. Driver-heavy course, ninth last week in Memphis, gained across the board, not just off the tee, but on approach and putting. Played his way into the top 50 to make the field. By the way, he is 37th, Kurt Kitayama. So on a course where I think he can contend, where he doesn't necessarily need to make the top 30, I think he does this week, and he gets a good week and makes it to East Lake in Atlanta. So Kurt Kitayama, 50-1.
Kelly Bidlin, what ended up on your card, my friend?
A lot of the same names as Wes Reynolds. I can tell you that much. Only two outrights for me this week. I did go the Rory McIlroy route. 9-1 here at Circa. Gonna play Rory. We haven't seen him since the Open. We know he took off last week. But like you talked about, Wes, this course, just as I'm looking at it, view, it looks to be a very, very good Rory McIlroy course for him off the tee here. So going to play Rory 9-1. And then the only other guy that I added on there was Ludvig. Played him last week, going right back to him. Wes broke it down well. I think his game should fit in well here as well. So played Ludvig 22-1. I also played Ludvig in the winter without Scheffler and McIlroy market at 14-1. So, you know, if Rory, Ludvig, you guys want to run 1-2, that'd be really cool. Played a little bit of that, and then both those guys top fives as well, and then top 10, Cameron Young. I'm with you on Cameron Young this week, Wes. I don't even know the last time I bet Cameron Young, but I am with you on him this week. I think this sets up well for him. Again, I was extremely impressed with what he did this past weekend, putting that together after coming off that win. So going right to him at in a top 10 market. Another guy I'm going back to. We'll see. He did not have a good week last week and had been in incredible form before that. It was Matt Fitzpatrick. Not the longest guy off the tee, but we've seen his ball striking numbers just continue to improve this year. He's still going to be one of the best putters that's out there. And if we do expect there to be scoring on this course, that's going to come into play. So played him in the top 10 market at plus 240. And then I'm with you on Kitayama, man. This is, if we're talking about ball strikers and we think this is going to be a big deal this week, you know, a dude who's good off the tee and good with long irons, that is Kurt Kitayama. We'll just cross our fingers and hope the guy can make some putts again this week. I played him top 10 and I played him heavy in the top 20 market. So that's everything placements. Well, I already do have a few matchups in as well. I played Cameron Young over Hideki Matsuyama, plus 109. I was a little shocked Cameron Young was the dog in that market. Fitzpatrick over Burns. I did play that, but I get your reasoning on Burns. And then I played Rory over Fleetwood at minus 150. Tommy, you're a champ. You handled it. He amazes me with the post-round interviews that he does these every time, and he like seems to take away positives and negatives. But
that's why I'm not used to losing 20 of these. What do you mean? Everybody was like, that was the one thing that also like was like bugging me on Twitter. Everybody was like, oh, what a class act he was after this. I'm like, he's done it 20 times before. Of course, he's like, he's really good at it. He's got the script as to how to tell you how big a loser
he has learned from Ricky Fowler, I tell you. He is Mr. Congeniality. Because I was telling Kelly via text on Sunday, I was like, I almost want it more badly for him than I do for me. Almost. Almost didn't count. But to Kelly's point on the driving distance, by the way, I take the guys out, obviously, that aren't in the field this week. But if you're just looking throughout the season, number one driving distance, Rory. Kitayama right behind. Chris Goddard, Ludvig Gobert, Cameron Young, Xander Schauffele, Taylor Pendrith, Johnny Vegas, Ryan Fox, Sam Burns. Those were the top 10 in terms of average driving distance in this week's field.
Yeah, so I'm going with some bombers this week. We'll see how it plays out. But just the two outrights and then a bunch of finishing positions. I do like Kitayama, like Cameron Young. I think those are good finishing position plays this week.
Yeah, only three outrights for me, and I guess it's kind of a pod play, although Kelly didn't go outright. I played Kitayama. He is actually number two overall in my model, averaged out over the three different ones that I ran behind, yes, only Scotty Scheffler, if that tells you anything, and ahead of Rory McIlroy, which is pretty interesting in all of that. I did not get 50. I got 46 on Kitayama. I also put a top 10 on him at plus 320. If you look here with the stuff that I found very important in this, I emphasized off the tee, I emphasized distance, and I emphasized the kind of the longer irons and birdie makers. Mm-hmm. Kurt Kitayama, guys, I mean, you're talking, I understand it's a field of 50, but he's third in this field off the tee over the last 40 rounds. He is second in this field in driving distance over the last 40 rounds. He is sixth in the 175 plus irons approaches over the last 40 rounds. If you go into the birdie or better gain, the guy that can go in and make you some birdies, and if you know this is when they present themselves, I need the guy to make them, he's second behind Scotty Scheffler in this field over the last 40 rounds. I mean, there's just a whole lot to love about Kurt Kitayama. And if you're playing DFS this week, the only problem is he's going, like, he's only $7,600. Like, he's going to be, I mean, he's going to model well for everybody. He's going to be, it's like the anti thing that we normally talk about here, which is like, okay, you can't bet him, so maybe you get like go heavy on him in DFS. Like, if you're going to play Kurt Kitayama this week, then you have to play like 100% of your lineups with Kurt Kitayama. Like, you have to be ahead of the field, like, because he's going to be so owned. So you either have to be above the field or way, way, way under with Kitayama. So just understand at 7,600, he's going to model awesome for everyone. He fits this course so incredibly well. So
three straight events where he's gained with the putter, boys. That's the big one right there. Come on, Kurt. Just keep it up.
I mean, even just overall approach, even if you don't go to the long irons, right? I mean, fifth overall in this field in the last 40 rounds, tee to green second. I mean, there's just like, dude's on fire right
well,
now.
Well, he hit one of the shots of the year at the 3M where he hit that 200-yard-plus bunker shot to like a foot and a half, which kind of clinched the tournament for him. That's where I finally felt good, like, okay, he's going to win. He can't not win hitting a shot like that. So he's been killing it with the long irons, as you mentioned.
I did not, I didn't play Cam Young in any sort of placement or outright or anything like that, but I did take him in a head-to-head. I didn't play him against Hideki, Kelly. I played him against Morikawa, so I have him over Morikawa. Morikawa's in a funk right now. Like, he's not playing well.
He faded over the weekend because he was in contention first two rounds. It's like, okay, here we go. Maybe he found the right caddy. Maybe the fifth time was a charm with Mark Urbanek, Tony Finau's old guy. But then just faded and became Colin Parakawa, as I like to call him, because didn't make anything.
Yeah, I mean, this is a dude here that if we think, you know, again, so if you can ask any of the guys on tour, right? Like, if you have awesome bent grass greens, then like that's the ones they would prefer to putt on, right? Like, they roll incredibly true, they're whatever, and so that. So like, if I'm wrong and this does end up being a putting contest, Colin has lost putting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, five of the last six tournaments he's lost putting. So like,
yeah, that's,
I mean,
good.
If this does turn into a putting contest, like, you don't want to be on Colin Morikawa. So I'm fading him to Cam Young here in this one. So only two other outrights for me. One a model play and one a borderline model play. And I guess you could just say I'm going with feel and vibes, which, you know, always goes great. But the model play is Goddrup. He bombs it. He is a birdie maker. He is really good on, if you look at the off the tee numbers, tee to green numbers, all the different stuff like that. Goddrup is going to light up your model. If you go into those, that category, the strokes gained on par four, like Wes said that he threw into his model this week, Chris Goddrup, over the last 40 rounds of all of the people in this tournament, he is third overall in strokes gained on par four. And as we said, there are only two par fives on this course, so the extra par fours, that is actually where Chris Goddrup does his damage. And so if you want to nitpick and stuff that you might not like about Goddrup a little bit, is that even though he does gain off the tee a lot, he can be a little spray. He can spray it here and there. And so if these hazards are much more in play, if this rough is much more penal than it was the last time we saw this course, he could find himself in some, maybe find himself in some danger. But I'm going to just ride all of the good things about him and hope that he doesn't spray it off the tee a ton here. So Chris Goddard, for me, you can find, I got 43, but that's here in town at Circa. I think you can find kind of in that 40-ish range on Goddard, which is still fine by me. Also playing the upside on him with a top five and a top 10. Top five is a 6-1. Top 10 is a plus 260 on Chris Goddard. And then the vibe play guys, you know, I'm playing Justin Thomas. I look at this field and you go in and you look and he's gained off the tee in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven of his last eight tournaments, he's gained off the tee. He's good around the green. He's good on approach. You know, there's not really a ton to hate about JT's game right now, other than the fact that it doesn't seem like he can put four rounds together. But he's going to get all four rounds guaranteed to him here, no matter what. If he can keep, if he can stay hot off the tee here, like he has over the last nine tournaments, he can probably find his way into contention. So that's more of a vibes play for me with Justin Thomas.
Another possible right sprayer, but yeah,
like trending in the right direction, at least in my opinion. And so 32-1 on him, top five at plus 425. So that's it for me, is Justin Thomas outright and a top five, Chris Goddard outright, top five and top 10, and then Kurt Kitayama outright and a top 10 on him. Cam Young over Colin Morikawa. That is the card for me this week in this thing. Guys that we did not talk about here real quick, just so there are some people out there that might be wondering, hey, why didn't y'all mention XYZ? We did not mention, you know, a guy that we bet a ton. We didn't mention Russell Henley. We didn't mention JJ Spahn, who's absolutely on fire. We did not mention, well, you're going up against Hideki in this thing. Victor Hovland didn't get a mention here. Any of those guys in, of consideration to any of y'all?
I thought about Victor Hovland, but he's just, because the approach numbers are outstanding. Only Scotty has been better, and he's been really good with these long irons, but I worry a little bit about him spraying it. I worry a little bit about him around the greens, and and I think that that's what holds him back, and that's why he didn't make it. But certainly, if you're a more ball-striking heavy person, then you would consider him. But I did think about him. I also thought about Akshay Bhatia, who has been a little bit erratic, but I looked at the numbers and he was all over the place off the tee, and I just couldn't get there. But the markets like him in a lot of his matchups this week.
Maybe this is just like recency bias for me or something with him, but like, it seemed like every time they cut to him, it was him missing a putt. And like, that just stuck to me. And I'm just like, I can't bet this dude. It was like, okay, over to Bhatia. And it's just him missing. Like, he was just missing putts like left and right. So I just was like, okay, I can't, like, oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Holy
shit. A lot of red. Yeah.
Oh,
Isn't this what didn't he used to be like a quality putter or known as a quality putter?
Oh, so he's lost in seven of his last eight.
I'm with you, Wes. You mentioned the two guys. The two guys are rated out, I would say that, I mean, about the highest for me that I barely even considered playing was Hovland and Akshay. It was more off the tee stuff that was my concern with Akshay than the putting, but yeah, we pull this up and holy hell. Victor, look, I made my donation last week. I played him last week when he rated out high, and I'm good. I'll be fine if Hovland goes on and wins this one, and if I'm not on him. I'll tell you, Matt, you brought up the one name that I really struggled with because I've played him a ton here this summer is Russell Henley, and it was it would be more of a play on the odds than anything for Henley with me. I just it felt like. Look, I know this course with the distance in theory does not set up well for his game, but man, where he's at on the odds board compared to some of the other guys with what he's done this summer, I was a little shocked to see him that long. So I struggled going back and forth on that one. But I knew I was going to go with Rory. So obviously for the outright considerations, it trims it down to what you can play. But yeah, he I really struggled with. And then really, I would say the first leave-off for me was Goddard. He was the one that I was really, really close to playing that I ended up not.
I will say the person that popped in the model that at least was like kind of surprising to me, and then it makes sense whenever you start to factor in that you like the off the tee stuff and the distance stuff, but like Johnny Vegas actually rated out pretty high for me. Dug in.
Yeah.
There's not like a lot to hate with him. There's just not like a lot to love. He's kind of middling in everything, except for the driving distance stuff and whatever, but like, you know, if somebody wanted to play him in DFS, I mean, $6,100 in DFS, somebody wanted to play him in DFS, I wouldn't talk him off.
Worth like a top 20, like a dark horse. That's how I was thinking about playing him, because it's like, is he good enough to win an event like this against an elite field?
Right.
And I don't know that he is, but I think he's good enough to be like on a leaderboard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was kind of the surprise model guy for me. And it kind of makes sense.
Right. Yeah, the game would fit, right? If you're just looking for the profile of what we think is going to work here, then yeah, he's the player profile you're looking for.
Yeah, it's always fun to see who was dead last in the model. Brian Campbell, dead last in the model for me. Brian Campbell, Tom Hoagie.
Wow, McCarthy, that's my bottom two.
Denny McCarthy, JT Post, and Michael Kim are the bottom five for me.
Those four guys seem like they're going to have three shot holes on some of these part fours.
Yeah, my bottom five in order would be Campbell, Hoagie, Dietrich, Novak, Day.
Yeah, Hoagie was down there low for me. That was the guy that when I saw he was in the top 50, I was like, how the hell was he in the top 50? Like, he didn't he had that good finish at the Players. And that's the only time I remember really seeing him on a leaderboard.
I mean, in theory, he's another guy that, like, this course could set up well for. I mean, I guess he's not super long off the tee, though.
If he just pipes it with the irons, you know.
Yeah, I just pipes it with those irons, man. That guy's just made a career off of gaining with those irons. Well, wow. If anybody thinks about, we talk about approach too much, though, Tom Hoagie in your top 50 at the end of the season is what we're talking about, because that's all that guy does well consistently.
He just flushes them, absolutely. Just flushes and he's been down from his usual standard, because it seems like every week I do the column, I go strokes gained approach. And then, you know, there's the usual suspects up there, and of course, Scotty's been up there number one for like the last 2 years. But then, like, top three or four, Tom Hoagie, like every single week, and it's like, oh man, I got to play him, and then, you know, doesn't really get there very often.
He's the guy you have to look for the reason to not play every time. You're like, let me just check real quick. Okay, yeah, right. Yeah, he's lost in putting.
It's like, so why is he 125 to 1 this week? Oh, there's reasons.
It's like, you look at like the driving distance stuff and again, I focused on so heavily on it, which it's no shock that Brian Campbell's dead last, but like, he's 280 off the tee.
Yeah.
Lucas Glover is 47th. In the field, and he's 294. So, like, the guy that is third to last is 14 yards longer on average off the tee than Brian Campbell.
There are guys on the Champions Tour that hit it longer than Brian Campbell.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, holy hell, that is unbelievable. Wow. Okay.
And that guy won two events this year.
I know. I mean, like, Jesus Christ, this game's weird. Yeah,
yeah.
It's almost
any comment on that, Wes? Yeah. Any comment on Brian Campbell still being around?
That tree was very friendly to Brian Campbell. When the longest hitter on the damn tour against the shortest hitter on a par five in a playoff in Mexico, where there's a little bit of altitude, too. And Aldrich Podgeter couldn't win. And then I didn't bet him in Detroit, and that's where he won.
I'm actually glad, as always, you can go to beeson.com.
Oh.
No, I was just going to say, I'm glad we ended with that story, because it's a perfect example of anything can happen in a golf tournament, even when you think you've got the perfect guy for the perfect course and all that. And no, old Brian Campbell's going to go out there and just putt it around for a while and end up beating your ass.
Yeah, just knock it on around. Guys, as always, you can head over to VEASAN.com. You can get Wes's full write-up of all of this. If you go to the picks page, VEASAN.com/picks, you will get all of our picks and then anything that gets added. And then also, Everybody else at the network that is betting this tournament will be listed on the picks page as well. Go in. You can get started for as low as $9.99 over there. And with that, you can also get our college football betting guide that just came out as well. Probably the best and most important thing, most valuable thing that we do at the network. You don't have any idea where these guys play. You don't know what's going on. Transfer portals messed everything up. So go in there and get ready for college football season, which, by the way, is only a couple of weeks away. For Kelly, for Wes, I am Matt. Good luck on all your BMW plays.